Hello, this is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL. Catholic Baltimore is a weekly radio program hosted by the Archdiocese of Baltimore, airing each Sunday following the broadcast of the Radio Mass of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic radio partners for sharing with us some of the contents in this program and for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to the Archdiocese of Baltimore every Sunday.
I'm Bob Krebs, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. How did the Catholic faith provide an oasis for legendary entertainers like Mary Astor, John Wayne, Alfred Hitchcock, Bob Hope, and others? Through her research, Mary Claire Kendall has captured compelling stories of Hollywood stars of the Golden Age and published them in her new book, Oasis, Conversion Stories of Hollywood Legends. Mary Claire Kendall, welcome to Catholic Baltimore.
Thank you, Bob. It's wonderful to join you.
Well, this book is fascinating, and we're going to talk about the book. But before we do, if you would please just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been writing for years and years and years, and part of that writing was screenwriting, spec. So I was very focused on Hollywood and the actors, especially from the Golden Age, Gary Cooper and just all the really top stars. And so I started actually in 2006. I was watching a program on Turner Classic Music. It was an interview with Betty Hutton that Robert Osborne was doing, and I was just blown away. And after that, I wrote to her. And from there, I started writing about these stars. But I'm basically a writer, screenwriting, biography, fiction, and nonfiction.
Yeah. So how did the idea of writing about conversion stories among these Hollywood stars, how did that come about?
So I was watching that classic interview that Bob Osborne did with Betty Hutton, and because I had been doing the screenwriting, and I was just fascinated. I mean, her life was just incredible. She was at the top of the heap, and then the top of her game, and then in about 52, she became terribly addicted to drugs, and it's just a fascinating story. So I started writing about her, and then it was published in our Sunday Visitor. Then Father C. John McCloskey, a friend of mine, said, you know, another conversion story for you when Jane Wyman died, and it just built. And my mother said, you know, you might want to write a book of profiles. Mm-hmm. And so, because you can't really make a living on articles. And so gradually I, you know, moved toward that goal, and I finally achieved it with Franciscan Media.
Tell us about the research process for this book. How did you go about gathering all the different facts from all the different Hollywood stars?
I was doing the Betty Hutton story for Newport Life magazine, so I got in touch with A.C. Lyles, who was an institution at Paramount. He had started there when he was 18, went out to go work for Adolph Zukor and Cecil B. DeMille. And so A.C. became a friend. He called me up right away and gave me a wonderful interview about Betty Hutton, and then started introducing me to other relatives of some of these icons, Spencer Tracy's son, Maria Cooper Janis, the daughter of Gary Cooper. So I had a lot of actual original sources. And then, of course, there's a lot of biography. A lot has been written about these legends. A lot of relatives, a lot of the priests who and the people that helped them on their faith journey. Betty Hutton's best friend, who prefers remaining anonymous.
Mm-hmm. What are your, you have a few of the stories in your book that are favorites of yours. Can you share a few with us?
Oh, boy. They all become favorites because whenever you, I mean, these people were so accomplished, you know, professionally. And then, of course, you know, a lot of personality and a lot of, you know, foibles, human foibles, as we all have. But, you know, it's amazing, the foibles. I mean, amazing some of the women and the choices they made in husbands, for instance. So, but Betty Hutton is, not to be redundant here, but she is just, I mean, her story is just amazing. She went from, you know, just the drama, which is, drama is, essence is conflict, a lot of conflict. Gary Cooper, of course, you know, having that personal interview with his daughter, mm-hmm. And of course, him being such an amazing, wonderful, you know, human specimen on the wall, H.G. Wells' wall, you know, all the actors he had, and he was just the most handsome, most incredible. But he had a very, you know, his was a difficult story. He was like a female magnet, and really got caught up in that, and that busted up his family for a while, and then finally he realized, you know, I shouldn't be quite such a bum. He returned to his family and saw that that faith and God was really going to help him. And then towards the end of his life, he did get very sick with cancer, and he saw it as God's will.
What surprised you about these stars and their stories?
To see how much they got caught up in the Hollywood life, and how, I mean, they were very weak. And as I said, that some of the choices in husbands, I mean, this is a very human, this is nothing spiritual, but,
sure.
I mean, Mary Astor was gorgeous, and she ended up marrying people that just weren't her equal. Well, she married Howard Hawks' brother, but he died tragically in when he was filming in an airplane. The airplanes collided, it was the sun. But the choice in husbands and the choices, not even just husbands, just the choices that they made. So they didn't often have, I guess because you're so famous, you didn't really have those good advisors because everybody's kind of in there trying to get their piece of you.
I was interested in talking about Bob Hope because his wife for many, many decades was a very devout Catholic, and Bob held out to kind of the last minute, did he not, or am I mistaken on that?
Yeah, I think he said his religion, I'm a comedian by
religion.
he was, you know, they were from the time of his relationship with Cardinal Spellman, going out and entertaining the troops, Cardinal Spellman would get a bigger applause, and that kind of made him think. And
that's funny.
The faith of the troops made him think, and their dedication, you know, that they were sacrificing so much, that made him think. So just gradually, you know, but he was, Bob Hope was just, I mean, he excelled at everything.
You know? Oh, yeah.
But he was a hard worker, and you just can't believe the schedule he kept. So you can imagine he didn't really, God wasn't entering into his life. And,
sure.
And then I think with all that, you know, that lifestyle, you're on the road, him and Bing, you know,
right.
They were both kind of bad boys. But
sure. Is there a common denominator in all of these stories that you found?
Common denominator is that they do confront their humanity. They do, like Alfred Hitchcock said to Ingrid Bergman when he got sick. He said, "Ingrid, I'm going to die." And she said, "Of course you're going to die. We all are." And so, I mean, he didn't need, at least, you know, suddenly you need God. I think you come confront a crisis in life, and that's a common denominator. A common denominator, too, is how faith helps them come out of the, you know, the wilderness that they found themselves in, because you're all the glitter that doesn't feed the soul. So I think the common denominator, of course, is faith.
Right.
Of course, how God, Father Pork Loftus, who baptized Ann Miller right at the end of her life, how God, it's just amazing the timing, you know, how things happen, and but for this wouldn't have happened, and so how God is really active in our lives. We don't realize it. Certainly, these stars all caught up in the world of celebrity didn't realize it, but God was right there with them, and finally, you know, he goes in and he makes a huge difference, and fortunately they accepted him.
Yeah. So what are you working on now? Is there another project along these same lines or something new?
Right. Well, I am working on the second, a sequel to this Oasis, so it'll have Spencer Tracy and Sir Alec Guinness. And then I've just had a publisher greenlight a book on Hemingway, which will be a little bit further down the line. That'll be afterwards. But yeah, so I am definitely continuing on this path of faith journeys of celebrities, be they in the world of film or literature.
Mary Claire Kendall, thanks for being with us today on Catholic Baltimore.
Take care. Thanks, Bob. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oasis, Conversion Stories of Hollywood Legends, is available at www.franciscanmedia.org or from your favorite Catholic bookstore or online bookseller. For Catholic Baltimore, I'm Bob Krebs.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. The Fortnight for Freedom ends tomorrow, July 4th at 10 minutes past noon with a closing mass at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C. with the U.S. bishops. The two-week observance highlights the vital importance of religious liberty. Look what is happening to Christians in the Middle East, which Pope Francis has called genocide, said Baltimore Archbishop William E. Laurie in a video, The Right to Religious Freedom, produced by the U.S. bishops. Look at the nonviolent but increasing exclusion of religion in the public square closer to home, he continued. Check CatholicReview.org for coverage of the Fortnight for Freedom and more reflections from the Archbishop. Also happening July 4th. Catonsville's annual 4th of July parade, which enjoys support from Knights of Columbus Patapsco Council 1960. The Council Hall, located at 1010 Frederick Road in Catonsville, is Parade Central, a place for the public to visit as well as a prime vantage point for the parade judges. Visit CatholicReview.org for a profile of the Luco family. The father, Scott, who serves as Grand Knight, and his four sons, aged 18 to 27, are an integral part of the vibrant Patapsco Council. Also on CatholicReview.org, every faithful attendee of Sunday Mass has grown accustomed, maybe even attached, to a parish priest. For many, the news that their beloved pastor, the man who may have sacramentalized their marriage or baptized their children, is being transferred comes with a bit of anxiety and grief. We've spoken with Monsignor James W. Hannon, director of the Archdiocesan Division of Clergy Personnel, for a clearer understanding of what drives the decision-making process for clergy transfers. These stories and more at CatholicReview.org. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, this is Eric Zygmunt.
Do you want to know more about what's going on in the church and the world than you can get from your daily newspaper or local TV? Read the only publication in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the church full-time, the Catholic Review. Pick up the print magazine monthly at your parish or have the Catholic Review delivered to your home every month. You can get fresh news every day online at CatholicReview.org. Subscribe to the Catholic Review e-newsletter for twice-a-week updates. Just text CR Media to 84576. Find our app on Apple and Android, and follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Wherever your faith takes you, Catholic Review Media is ready to inspire, teach, inform, and engage. Read it today, in print and online, at CatholicReview.org. That's CatholicReview.org.
You are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL.
I'm Bob Krebs, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. Karen Edmonston is a former atheist, a convert to Catholicism, an author, blogger, and regular guest on Catholic Radio. In her new book, You Can Share the Faith, Reaching Out One Person at a Time, she gives us practical pointers from her own story and the stories of others to help Catholics share our faith confidently and with compassion. Karen Edmonston, welcome to Catholic Baltimore.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Why did you write You Can Share the Faith, Reaching Out One Person at a Time?
Well, the reasons were many and varied. As you said, a lot more of this book is personal, my own personal journey, and having come from a background of growing up without any religion in my life, really, and observing Christians when I was a child and as I was growing up, observing people from really all different traditions, I realized at a certain point that
a lot of the things that I watched and saw and experienced had stayed with me and had formed my opinions of what Christianity was all about from the outside looking in, anyway. And I was very blessed to have a number of friends who remained my friends no matter what I believed, no matter what phase of life I was in. And sometimes I was in some pretty anti-Christian, difficult and sinful phases of life. But I had friends who stuck with me through all that, who never stopped gently encouraging and leading me, and who really at the bottom of it, what they showed me was that they had a relationship with Jesus, that informed and formed their lives in a profound way, and that was a huge and important witness to me. And so it was important to me to share that was a form of evangelization that worked really well on me, and I figured if it worked with me, certainly it probably has worked with a lot of other people that might resonate with a lot of people. And those friends gave me a model of evangelization that I hope that I've adopted and that I hope I can carry on and share with other people.
So expand on that, if you would, please.
Well, a couple stories that I tell early in the book have to do with things that I observed when I was younger that had sort of set me against Christianity, if you will.
Yeah.
And when I was in high school, I met a new friend. His name is Jack, and he appears in several stories in this book. And his was the first Catholic family that I ever really got to know. And I was really struck by what their family life was like, the way they had what I thought of at the time. I thought of them as kind of crazy, strict Catholic rules. You know, Mass every Sunday, no matter what. There were no exceptions, you know. Jack and his siblings never got out of that, and they had certain rules about dating and what time you could get home and things that were much stricter than the home I grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
And yet at the same time, Jack's mom, Loretta, was this wonderful example of, she was a corporal work of mercy in action. She opened her home up to everyone. She accepted everyone. She was sort of that place where, you know, whether you were one of the cool kids in high school or one of the strange, different kind of outcast kids, you were welcome at Loretta's home. And she threw these parties. One of the stories I tell in the book is about her 12th night party. And at the time that I was in high school, I had no idea what 12th night meant or that they were celebrating the Epiphany. And I said to Jack, why is your Christmas tree still up on January 6th? You know, everybody, all of us normal people take our trees down by New Year's. And, and he said, well, it's a 12th night party, you know, and we're celebrating when the wise men came to see Jesus. And so Mrs. Donnelly would throw these terrific 12th night parties, you know, with food and hot chocolate, and the tree was still up, and the whole atmosphere was so festive. And that is, like, you know, my first example of this kind of countercultural Catholic revelry that showed me that Catholics really know how to feast. You know, in addition to their crazy rules, they actually really know how to have some fun, too.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a lighthearted example. But things like that continued on through my 20s. There were examples of people I worked with, people I got to know in the workplace who were Catholic, who some of them who made difficult decisions, brave decisions about their lives, things that I couldn't at the time really understand or embrace. But again, those things stuck with me, like the example of a young single woman who made a mistake in a relationship and became pregnant, and I was her supervisor. And when she came to me to tell me about the pregnancy, she told me she was going to keep the baby. And at the time, I was adamantly pro-choice. And I said, you don't have to do that. There's a much easier way out of this. And she said, no, I absolutely can't do that. She said, I'm a Catholic. I believe what my faith teaches, and I will carry this baby to term, and I'm going to put it up for adoption. And she did. And there again, there was a profound example of somebody whose faith was truly informing her life. And I looked at her, and something inside me shifted that day. I still remember being so struck by her bravery and by the fact that she was willing to risk ridicule from many other pro-choice co-workers for the sake of doing what she thought was right. So examples of people like that through my young adult life stuck with me and affected me profoundly.
My guest is Karen Edmiston, and her latest book is titled You Can Share the Faith, Reaching Out One Person at a Time. Why is it important for us Christians, us Catholic Christians, to share our faith? Isn't that somebody else's job? Isn't that the priest's job or the missionary's job or the pope's job?
We would like it to be sometimes, wouldn't we?
Yes.
That would be easier.
It'd make things a lot easier for most of us.
Yeah. You know, I say in the opening of the book that, you know, when we read in Matthew 28:19, when we read the Great Commission, go therefore and make disciples of all nations, most of us just kind of want to turn around and run because that sounds too intimidating. That's too big a job. But, you know, that's actually the commission that the Lord gave us. Mm-hmm. But the good news is, you know, we don't have to try to change the whole world in one shot. What God has asked us to do is to look around and work one person at a time. You know, sometimes that means that we might be affecting or praying for the Holy Spirit to be at work in the life of a spouse or a friend or a sibling or a parent or a child. And God just asks us to work and cultivate that little field that he's put right in front of us. And that's enough. That's what he's asking of most of us. So it doesn't have to be that huge, intimidating job that we sometimes turn it into. Mm.
Your book contains do's and don'ts. Share a few of the do's.
Okay. And I just want to say a little bit of a disclaimer. You know, they're not meant to be like concrete actions that if we do this, it's going to work, and if we don't do that, then we'll see conversion. But the do's and don'ts became kind of a nice framework for sharing some of these stories. Mm-hmm. And I'll just run through what I have listed as the chapter titles for the do's.
Okay.
One, I say, do remember that you're being watched. And that's where I talk about some of those stories that I just recounted to you, those people who had an impact on me. And that has left me thinking about how I need to be aware of what shape is my soul in and what kind of witness am I being as a Catholic to the people that I encounter in my everyday life. Chapter 2 is do fall in love with Jesus. And chapter 3 is do hang out with all kinds of people. And by that I mean that as important as it is that we cultivate a real Catholic culture in our own families, mm-hmm. in our parish, and that we have that support from like-minded people and that we share our faith with all those people, we also sometimes have to kind of get out of that Catholic bubble, I think, and be open to other friendships and relationships, because how can we share the gospel if the only people we ever encounter are people who agree with everything that,
sure.
that we think and believe?
Yeah, good advice.
Another chapter is do be honest about your own struggles. Another do that I have is to engage the culture. And by that, I mean that we can take a look around us at both classical and popular culture and just look for points of intersection. You know, where are places where faith and what's around us in the culture meet and find that common ground and build on that? And we can use those kinds of conversations with friends and family to start conversations about some deeper things, about the faith, about philosophies on life and things like that. And then the final do is do remember that conversion comes in stages. Mm-hmm. And I included that because, you know, I know for me, my own conversion took years and years. And I'm sure that some of my friends got a little tired of praying for me at times and wondered if I was ever going to change.
Karen Edmiston, thanks so much for being with us today on the program.
Bob, thanks so much. Always a pleasure.
You Can Share the Faith, Reaching Out One Person at a Time, is available from its publisher, Our Sunday Visitor, at osv.com, or from your favorite Catholic bookstore or online bookseller. For Catholic Baltimore, I'm Bob Krebs.
Life can be hard, and at times we feel overwhelmed and alone. When faced with problems, know that there is a group of Catholics who are part of the prayer ministry of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, waiting to lift you and your needs to God in prayer. This ministry is comprised of men and women, young and old, religious and lay, from every ethnic and cultural background. They pray as individuals and in groups, in homes and meeting spaces throughout Baltimore. Like you, They are people who have suffered the same hurts, fears, pains, sickness, loss, and everyday burdens. Learn more about this ministry by visiting our website at www.archbalt.org. If you are in need of prayer, send your prayer request to prayers@archbalt.org or by phone to 410-547-5517. Would you like to volunteer to be a part of the ministry? Prayer ministers are always needed. Please call or email our coordinator, who would be happy to speak with you.
For over 200 years, the Archdiocese of Baltimore's Catholic schools have welcomed families of all faiths, providing generations of students with an academically excellent value-based education taught in a Christ-centered environment. With a 99% graduation rate, the highest in the nation, and a 98% college attendance rate, Catholic school graduates are better prepared to succeed in college and beyond. But Catholic schools offer more than an education. They offer tradition, family, faith, and the opportunity for students to grow as individuals and as future leaders in their community. Discover these and other benefits of a Catholic school and learn more about why Catholic schools are an unparalleled value in education in the Baltimore region. Call 1-800-5-CATHOLIC or visit www.archbalt.org. Catholic schools, a place to grow.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Baltimore. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May God bless us and keep us always in his love.